let me in. Shiba, shiba. I want to be closer to you. Shiba, shiba. Open up your soul. Shiba, shiba. Let me find that part of you, the part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. You know, we love our film festivals, and I'm a particular fan of the Noir Film Festival that happens every year. Here to talk about it, America's favorite shapely and talented noir aficionado, I'd like to welcome the effervescent Eddie Muller. Welcome.
Hi, Marilyn.
How are you?
It's good to hear you again.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. I'm a little stressed out because the festival is coming up at the end of this week.
That's right.
And I'm disappointed because usually I appear with you in person to do this, and this time I have to do it over the phone. But that's why I say it. It's great to hear your beautiful voice.
Well, thank you. This means that I have to actually make an appearance at the Noir Festival. I have to brave the bridge just to see you if I want to.
Well, you did last time, I know. So you're more than welcome.
Well, thank you. So I know our listening audience has, we've got a lot of people who've been to Noir before, but there's always new people. So tell our listening audience a little bit about Noir City and the Noir Festival.
Okay. And you're absolutely right. I mean, it's great because our festival has a very hardcore, devoted following of people who love these mid-century movies. Mm-hmm. And film noir for people who don't really grasp it or haven't been exposed to it yet, was a movement, an artistic movement in the movies in the 20th century. They were very dark crime stories, but mm-hmm. even though they kind of had warnings about the worst aspects of human behavior and all of that, they were so sexy and stylish and witty in the dialogue that now I have to say they're kind of like comfort food for
yes.
people. And also, you know, because they're just so cinematic,
mm-hmm.
They've been very influential on future generations of filmmakers who came after the time these were made, which was mostly the 40s and 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And so younger people who love, you know, Christopher Nolan movies or the Coen brothers or Martin Scorsese or someone like that, they can see the roots of those filmmakers' obsessions in these movies. And as you pointed out, I also, doing this festival, which this is our 22nd year here in the Bay Area, has led to me now being like a host on Turner Classic Movies
mm-hmm.
and having kind of a national profile, which is wonderful because it allows me to connect with these younger viewers. And honestly, Marilyn, that's where my interest really lies now,
mm-hmm.
is because I want those people to understand, you know, what movies were and what movies can still be, and to not just be obsessed with superhero films,
right?
And, you know, films that look like they're video games or something. This is a different type of cinema that we celebrate. And I'm just thrilled that it's been so successful that we've been able to do it for 22 years and counting.
Well, I have a question about your high profile status. Does it ever like kind of mess with your head? Because, you know, to the outside world, you're Eddie Muller, but you're in just inside your body. So to you, you're just you.
Yes, I think I've been very fortunate in that regard. I don't consider myself any kind of celebrity or anything like that. I mean, it's funny. Yesterday I did like a podcast thing involving Sketchfest that's happening here in the city. And, you know, I was the celebrity expert guest.
Ooh.
That came on the show at
uh-huh.
the end. And, you know, with people that I can, like Jennifer Tilly was one of the guests.
Wow!
Right, and she's terrific. And I love, you know, her movie Bound, which uh-huh. is like a modern film noir movie. So, you know, I think of those people as like, oh, wow, this is great. I'm going to get to do this show with Jennifer Tilly. You know?
Yeah.
And, but yet I always, I really appreciate that question because I never feel like I'm a celebrity or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I always feel like I'm just doing what I love to do, and I'm grateful that I have an audience for it.
Right.
And people have said to me, you know, how did you make the festival so successful? And I say, the audience made mm-hmm. it successful. You know, they show up, you know, for 22 years now. And so that's really, it's a very organic and integrated thing. I guess I'm just the right person in the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it has really worked out, and I'm very, very grateful for it. And Turner Classic Movies is fantastic because, you know, I don't have to do everything because I have my specialty. I present film noir.
Okay.
You know, and they give me my little, what they call the franchise, which is Noir Alley, that's on Saturday night and Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. And they let me say whatever I want to say. I get to pick the movies that I show, and it just couldn't be a better situation. So I'm very, very grateful all the time.
Well, so you've been doing this for 22 years. You know, you've obviously seen thousands and thousands of movies. Do you ever run out of movies, or have you had to like circle back?
That's an interesting question because it's not that I run out. And last year was interesting because you will recall, because you attended the festival,
mm-hmm.
that I showed a lot of international films.
Right.
Because I don't really consider, you know, when I started doing this, I really thought that film noir was an exclusively American phenomenon.
Mm.
And then as my work got more recognized and more popular, and I was invited to travel around the world and go to France and Argentina, and I came to understand that, well, they have their own version of it as well,
right.
Kind of contemporaneous with the movies that I was familiar with. And so I became very interested in exposing my audience to these other examples of film noir around the world, which is really a beautiful cultural exchange thing that was happening.
Well, that's what I want to ask you about, because you talk about film noir all around the world, and I saw some of the Japanese ones, and they were really bleak in an amazing way. But there was a lot that came sort of out of the post-war era. So with that being said, was film noir something that people in other countries saw and emulated in their own way, or was it something that came up all at the same time? It just sort of naturally.
And that's an interesting question, and it's a little. I mean, I'm constantly investigating
mm-hmm.
that question.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I see movies like there are French films that were clearly inspired by American movies.
Okay.
Like in the 50s, a lot of French films were inspired by American film noir, especially The Asphalt Jungle. And heist films and caper movies
mm-hmm.
were something that wasn't really common elsewhere in the world. And when they saw the American version of that,
mm-hmm.
Yes, they kind of copied them. But it goes the other way as well, because we're certainly making examples of what we would later call film noir in Europe before we started doing it in the United States.
Mm.
So Germany and France in particular
right.
were making in the 30s, in Germany's case as far back as the 20s, were making films that had the look and feel of film noir that clearly influenced the American style.
Mm-hmm.
But also a big factor is that a lot of those filmmakers that were working in the 30s left Europe because they did not want to work under the Nazi regime
sure.
in Germany and in France. And so they escaped and came to Hollywood. And these were some of the greatest filmmakers in the world, you know, Fritz Lang and Otto Preminger and Robert Siadmak. And so that they brought their particular style and vision to Hollywood. And that was a big part of what constituted the film noir movement. That's what I call it.
Okay, so when you're looking at all of at film noir from all over the place, are there certain themes that like you look at it and you go, oh, they did this theme, that's clearly American, or these themes are common in French noir, or these themes are common in Argentinian noir, or is it pretty universal, like the femme fatale and the, you know, the sort of dark anti-hero?
It's pretty universal. Mostly these are stories about desperate people doing desperate things.
Mm.
I mean, that's really what constitutes a film noir. Like, mm-hmm. it's normal people who, for various reasons, whatever it may be, desire or they're broke. You know, that's generally what's behind heist movies. You know, they will do something that an ordinary person would never consider doing. And then that's the suspense and that's the tension. And then they reap the consequences. So what's fascinating to me about it is seeing how different cultures treat what's essentially the same kind of story. So it's fascinating because French movies, for instance, or Scandinavian movies, they had a much more mature attitude about some issues than Hollywood movies had.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, this is the example I love to use. The most famous film noir made in Hollywood was The Postman Always Rings Twice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a story about an illicit love affair, and the only possible solution is that the lovers decide to kill her husband so that they can be together.
Yeah, that's the only possible solution.
This is an American film noir, right? They have to kill the husband.
Sure.
Because Hollywood would never tolerate the idea of people divorcing. So they actually like, well, yeah, okay, that's the story. But, you know, they pay the price at the end, so that's a good story for us to tell.
Mm-hmm.
That same movie, when it's made in Norway mm-hmm. in 1949, made by a woman, no less, Edith Karlmar, it's a movie called Death is a Caress.
Ooh.
It's just as tragic and as dark, but they go to a divorce attorney and they get a divorce, which is a scene that you have never seen in a Hollywood movie of this time. It doesn't stop the tragedy from happening, but it was completely accepted, right? And that's why you also see, like in French films, the breakup of the relationship and the end of the romance is dealt with in a much more mature way. But mm-hmm. So when people commit the ultimate, you know, crime, murdering someone, there's usually something else to it other than just, I got to get out of this bad marriage.
Right. Okay. I love it. I love it. So this year, because you tend to have a focus for your different festivals. So what's the focus this year?
The focus this year is women as the protagonists of the films, because many years ago, when I first started doing this,
mm-hmm.
which was the early part of this century, can you believe it? I showed a lot of these films in Hollywood, and amazingly, a number of the women who starred in these movies were still alive.
Oh.
And I got to meet them, and they came out and did wonderful interviews, and I ended up getting a book out of this called Dark City Dames.
Mm.
And I was really, really proud of that book. It's still my favorite book of all the ones I've written. I've done about 14 books now.
Wow.
And that one just holds a special place in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been hoping for years and years to get it republished, and that is finally happening.
Oh, hooray!
This year. So, and I have to say, Marilyn, I will get you a copy of it.
Yay!
Please, my treat.
Thank you. I'll put it next to my other Eddie Mellers.
But it's interesting because I felt that the book was perhaps a little bit ahead of its time
mm-hmm.
in terms of a lot of the issues that have come up recently, like mm-hmm. the whole Me Too movement
mm-hmm.
and, you know, political correctness and a lot of this stuff, and just general more female empowerment issues were really addressed in this book from a previous generation of women, how
okay.
they looked at it. And I really wanted to publish the book again because of that. And it's happening, and I love the new edition. And so I decided I wanted to make these women the focus of this year's Film Festival, because now I have all these wonderful backstories that mm-hmm. I know because I had a personal relationships with them all. So that's pretty exciting. And also, traditionally, for some reason, because it involves cops and detectives and, you know, the occasional gunplay and mm-hmm. stuff, I think film noir has been considered historically to be kind of a masculine genre of film. And I don't necessarily see it that way, because I see it as completely about men and women mm-hmm. and their relationships. And at that time in Hollywood, these were the only films where women could really exert what now they call agency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back then I called it urgency.
Okay.
But, you know, they could be powerful. They could be dominant. They could, you know, they could have urges that the typical female character in a Hollywood movie was not allowed to have. And that has aged very, very well in these movies. And so I think that's why when we do this, I can tell you that the gender split in the audience is almost 50-50.
Okay.
Like just as many women come to see the shows as men. In some cases, even more.
So
that pleases me.
Is there, like, when you talk about the movies where the noir films where the women have agencies, what are some examples of that?
Oh, things like Out of the Past. I mean, she's the villain. The woman is the villain. But she's given a fully developed character.
Mm.
You know, everything that Barbara Stanwyck ever did in film noir, whether she was playing a villain like in Double Indemnity
mm-hmm.
or a powerful businesswoman like The Strange Love of Martha Ivers
mm-hmm.
or a terrorized woman like Sorry, Wrong Number, you know, she was the central character.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with Joan Crawford movies and Ida Lupino movies.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so it's just you just didn't really see that in other movies that were set. You know, you might see it if it was a costume drama and Betty Davis plays, you know, Queen Elizabeth or
mm-hmm.
something,
mm-hmm.
you know. But these were just stories about regular people, like The Postman Always Rings Twice, where Lana Turner has her most famous role. You know, she's just a woman who owns a roadside restaurant and gets entangled in an affair. And that was not common to see characters like that in Hollywood movies.
Mm. So let's go back to your book then. You talked about that a lot of the women who were in the films were still alive and you got to interview them. What was a story that really stood out for you at the time that you heard from one or multiple women?
Well, the thing that they were all very different. There were six women that I profiled in the book. And the idea behind it was I didn't want to do a book about big stars.
Okay.
I didn't want to write about Ava Gardner and Rita Hayworth and Lana Turner. And also the women had to be alive so that I could get the story from them.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted their voices. I didn't want it to be me imagining what they went through, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing they all had in common was this push-pull thing of, it was wonderful to work at a studio, it was wonderful to be a star and be cared for, but there were a lot of sacrifices that went along with it in terms of their personal life, in terms of men being totally in control of their mm. careers and, mm. in many cases, their lives.
Mm.
And so the book really becomes a tale of how six very different women all kind of competed for the same jobs at the same time in the same place and became very different people as a result of the experiences they went through. I mean, some like Colleen Gray became very devout, and she was a devout Christian, and she had a whole second life as a person doing good deeds.
Okay.
And then in other cases, you know, Anne Savage, who was the star of Detour, one of the mm-hmm. movies that we're showing in the festival, you know, she never really got another good role after that. And although she's legendary for that one film, mm-hmm. her career was very, very short. And by the early 1950s, she left Hollywood. And so this movie is her whole legacy.
Wow.
But her life story is amazing, the things that she did. She was a pilot. She was a deep-sea fisherman. And then she ended up working as a law clerk in an office in downtown Los Angeles, which is what she was doing when I met her.
Wow.
And so, you know, she got a wonderful last hurrah out of all of this. She died about 12 years ago. But she really loved it that I was able to travel around the country with her and show the film with her. And she was quite the character.
And so when does the book come out?
April. It comes out in very early April. It's done. I mean, I've seen an advanced copy of it, and I couldn't be happier with it. It's really a beautiful book.
Okay.
And this time around, the publisher, they didn't want to just give me this money because I'd already written the book. So they said, what are you going to add to it?
Ah.
And so I did profiles of 10 other actresses.
Oh, nice.
Now, granted, I didn't know them. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of them I did know. I take that back. Like Marsha Hunt, you know, once I started doing these festivals, the women who were still alive, not just the women, I mean, anybody who was involved in these films, mm-hmm. I've sought them out and said, come out and, you know, you won't, well, I would say you won't believe, you will love how much adoration you will get mm-hmm. From the audience for your work in these films. And which is true, because most of the women who did come to Noir City over the years have, you know, told me immediately afterwards, that was like the high point of my career. Because it does really register. You know, people talk about how movies can make you immortal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of talk until you're 83 or 84 years old and you get up in front of an entire audience, you know, 1,000 people in a movie theater uh-huh. who stand and give you an ovation
right.
at that stage of your life for work that you did 75 years ago or something.
Right, right,
right. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
All right.
So well, I've always enjoyed that part of what I do.
Well, then let's talk about some of the titles of the films that we're going to be seeing. And I know you've probably got a favorite here and there mixed in with the bunch.
I do, but, you know, I don't really talk about that very much because at this stage, I don't really play favorites. You know?
Okay.
I mean, I just, we're starting off the festival with The Narrow Margin and a movie called Hell's Half Acre. And both of those feature an actress named Marie Windsor,
mm-hmm.
who was one of the most indomitable women I've ever met in my life. And I have lots of great Marie stories to share. And Evelyn Keyes is in Hell's Half Acre. She's in The Prowler and 99 River Street. Those are two other movies that I'm showing. In many cases, there are multiple actresses that I profiled that are in the same movie. Like I'm showing The Killing on the first Saturday night of the festival. And Marie is also in that with Colleen Gray, who's mm-hmm. another one of the actresses that I profiled, who made her debut in a movie called Kiss of Death, which mm-hmm. I'm also showing at the festival. So I think I'm showing three movies for each of the six actresses that I profile. And then I'm sprinkling throughout movies featuring the other 10 actresses that I profile in the new edition of the book.
Okay. So I've heard of The Killing, but I don't remember what the synopsis is.
Oh, it's about a gang that tries to knock over a racetrack.
Oh, I've seen that one. That's really good.
It's a very early Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
His first Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
And Sterling Hayden is the male star.
Yeah, yeah.
But Colleen and Marie are the female stars who... Colleen always plays the good girl. Marie always plays the bad girl.
Uh-huh. never changes.
Yes, which is also part of what the book is about. I mean, it's really intriguing because, as you know, Hollywood had a tendency to typecast
yes.
people, you know, to a ridiculous degree.
Right.
And unless you were a Stanwyck or a Bette Davis or something like that, you never really got to vary. And that was a big part of why I chose to profile these women, because they weren't household names.
Mm-hmm.
They were working actors. And they were always wondering if they were going to get another good part. Right? That was not something that Bette Davis or Olivia de Havilland
right.
worried about.
Right, right, right.
Movies, right? But these actresses were like, am I going to get anything else? You know, what am I going to do? And it was very intriguing because they were very often competing with each other when they knew there was a good role out there. And that was really interesting when I was doing the book, because they all knew that I was talking to all of the other women.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they were friendly with each other and other times they were not. And it was really interesting when the book debuted. We had a big event at the Egyptian Theater in Hollywood,
uh-huh.
and it was the only time they were all together.
Ooh.
And it was really interesting.
Yeah. I'm sure it was. I'm sure that...
Yes. I can tell you from a professional perspective, it's not the best idea to invite six actresses to the same event and expect them to be really, really gracious and sharing.
Right. But on the other hand, it makes for some good drama.
Indeed it does. Indeed. It was really funny because, you know, a lot of people have this misconception that film noir movies and crime movies, and because they're genre pictures, they mistakenly call them B movies.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Oh, you know, and I remember sitting on that dais with the women, and somebody just popped out that term. You know, well, you know, we were all making B movies. And Evelyn Keyes just stood up and announced, I have never made a B movie.
I love it. Divadom at its finest. Yeah, that's what you really want to see. It's really, I live for stuff like that. You don't want it in your normal life, but, you know, a little soupçon every once in a while is always entertaining.
Exactly. Well, I'll tell you, Marilyn, when I see you at the festival, or maybe I'll even tell the story from the stage, I'll tell you, I know there are rules for this show,
uh-huh.
and I can't tell you exactly what was said backstage
okay.
in the green room, but there was a great moment backstage when they were all starting to go at it with each other.
I'm picturing the mirror cracked. Do you know that movie with Elizabeth
Taylor?
Oh
yeah, Taylor? Oh yeah.
Yeah, they were
and it was just fascinating because, you know, I was a lot younger then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not a young guy back then. I was 40 something years old, but you know, these were women that I grew up watching on screen, and I could have been intimidated by them. I was not. But I had to take charge, and I did.
De-escalate.
And I gave them what for.
Wow.
Because of their behavior, and they appreciated it. You know, it was a learning experience, you know.
Wow.
I said, look, you know, we all worked very hard on this book, and this is our big day when we're celebrating. So what I need you to do... And then I said something
uh-huh.
very vociferous to them.
Oh, I can imagine. I'm filling in it. I'm filling in the blanks myself.
Yes, and the room got very quiet, and there were a lot of nodding heads. And it's like, okay, Eddie, all right, we get the picture.
Mm-hmm. It just shows you that people, no matter what age they are, they're still just people.
Oh my gosh! Absolutely, absolutely. It never really fades.
Right.
And you know, when you've had that kind of glory, being a movie star and stuff, it's just like the question you asked me at the top of the show. Like, does it change you in some way when you're recognized and things like that? And I think maybe my experience with these women really helped me deal with where I am now.
Mm.
Like, you know, fame is very, very fleeting. Audrey Totter, one of the actresses that I write about, she said, you know, she's Scandinavian and she's extremely practical, puts on no airs or anything. And she says, you know, my father cautioned me when I got my first movie role, it's all fairy dust.
Mm.
Just remember, it's all fairy dust.
That's true.
Don't take it that seriously. And she thought that all the way up through her entire career and all the way to the end of her life. When I'm raving about this and that, she's kind of smiling, this little wry smile, and she says, Eddie, come on, it's not that big a deal. It's all fairy dust, you know?
That's really a great attitude. That probably helped her keep an even keel when, you know, when things get crazy in Hollywood.
Absolutely.
Which is all the time.
There was not a single one of these women who was like Norma Desmond in Sunset Boulevard, mm-hmm. you know, who couldn't let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to make my comeback and I'll be up there on the screen again. You know, none of them were like that. They all found something else valuable in life to replace what they had.
Very good.
And they were all happy. That's why they were all still alive when I came around, you know.
I love that. So when does the festival start?
It starts Friday, January 24th.
This Friday.
This Friday, yes.
And it's at
January 24th at the Grand Lake Theater in Oakland, California.
Okay.
We used to do it, of course, at the Castro Theater in San Francisco.
I know, I miss it.
I know. So
but I know it's never coming back.
Every movie fan in the Bay Area. But the Grand Lake is a fabulous, majestic venue.
It is gorgeous.
And, you know, they really care about the business of showing movies
mm-hmm,
there.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a movie theater. It is not a multi-purpose facility.
Mm-hmm.
It does one thing. It shows movies, which is right up my noir alley.
Okay, so it starts this Friday. How long does it run?
10 days. So it runs from the 24th of January through the 2nd of February. It's so funny because I'm always competing with the end of the football season, but I'm always happy that the people who come to my festivals are not sports fans.
Exactly. You're not really competing because I was never going to watch that game anyway.
Yeah. Well, I only worry, this is a funny thing, because I am a sports fan.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
And so I always worry that, oh, my God, you know, the 49ers are going to get in the playoffs and nobody's going to come that day when they play their big playoff game. But 49ers were not good this year, so I have free reign now. No competition. No, I don't think anybody's going to stay home to watch, you know, the Washington Commanders play.
Right.
So I'm feeling pretty good about that.
And so no spoilers. No spoilers. That's the thing you got to tell your audience. No spoilers for you because you are a sports guy. So.
I know. One time I was backstage at the Castro when the 49ers were in the Super Bowl.
Right, yeah.
And I was about to go on stage to introduce a movie, and I was actually watching the game on my phone backstage. And the 49ers were, like, driving down the field with, like, a minute to play. And it's like, oh, my God. And then I heard the announcer call my name, and I had to put my phone down. I didn't. Then I found out later they lost.
Oh. Well, but you were on stage, so as far as you were concerned, they were winning. So it was great.
Yes, I had a job to do.
Right. So for people who want to see them all, is it humanly possible?
Of course. We cater to those people. We have a passport that we, you know, that allows you to attend everything.
Wow.
And you know, you get a little break.
Mm-hmm.
It's great fun. And I was not joking when I said, you know, the audience makes this festival, because when I started doing it, it was like, I hope people want to come and watch these movies. And we wanted to have it be a fun show
mm-hmm.
and do a little extra. We have musical guests that appear, not every show, but
right.
on occasion. We have Nick Rossi, who's a fabulous jazz musician, as our musical director, and he plays with either his trio or his quartet. Before a lot of the shows, we have like torch singers who
mm-hmm.
come out and perform
mm-hmm.
at intermission. We, you know, we try to jazz it up a little bit. But the key thing was that the audience really got into the spirit of the thing and the period. And so they would come dressed in their finest 40s fashions. And, you know, there is a whole retro vintage culture in the area. And Noir City has become like a magnet for those people. Like, we great support from the Art Deco Society. You know, it really is terrific, because people who really live for this stuff, like I say, this is the magnet for them. And it is the best looking audience in the Bay Area.
Well, it's
no question about that.
It's an excuse to dress up in your period finery if you have it, and you don't get many of those opportunities. So,
but what's so great about it, Marilyn, and man, I love this. You don't have to do that.
Right.
You can come in your sweats if you want. That's quite all right. And just enjoy the show. And nobody really cares. Nobody vibes on anybody for like, oh, you're not part of the show, you know. Because we're just going to watch movies. But you know, in this day and age, that's become kind of a rarity.
Yes.
Like a night out at a show where you actually like have dinner and cocktails beforehand. And then you go to the show and it's a double bill. Everything that we do is always two movies. So it's like I consciously was trying to recreate the experience of going to the movies back in the 40s, where it was always a double bill. You never went to just see one movie. I don't know how many of your listeners, your younger listeners, are aware that a movie show was always two movies.
A double feature.
Yeah, exactly. An A picture and a B picture, you know. And I try to stick to that as much as possible.
I'm looking at the website, the Noir City program. I love all the stills that you guys get to promote the films. I love the way Anne Savage looks in that Detour picture. There's just something about it that's hilarious in this black and white still. How do you get these stills?
Oh my goodness! It's if you could see my closet, because I have been collecting this stuff forever.
Okay,
and so most of this is all from my own personal collection. I also have a huge collection of movie posters. It was funny, Marilyn, when I did my first book on the subject, Dark City: The Lost World of Film Noir, which I'm so proud to say was last year named one of the 100. Greatest film books of all time.
And I think I told you I'd had that book for years before I realized that you were the person that actually wrote it.
Yeah, I'm the guy that wrote that. And when I finished that book, I said as a prize for myself, I'm gonna treat myself to a couple of really cool movie posters that I always liked. Oh boy, what an addiction I started there. Because as soon as you buy two movie posters, it's like, then I've got four, then I've got ten. And now I have a storage unit and flat files full of movie posters. So it's,
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I know you're stressing on, you know, getting the festival up and running. So once more for our listening audience, when, where, and... what times, and where can they get tickets?
Okay. All of that is sort of the same place.
Oh, okay.
Which is really great.
Okay.
The when is January 24th, Friday, January 24th to Sunday, February 2nd. The where is the Grand Lake Theater in Oakland, California. All the information you need to know you can find at noircity.com. That's N-O-I-R-C-I-T-Y. .com. Really, that's all you need to know. I mean, we have on the weekends, we do all day long. I mean, matinees, Saturdays are four different movies. Sunday is two movies, but we repeat them in a matinee show and an evening show. And otherwise, it's in the weeknights, and showtime is usually about 7 o'clock, although I strongly advise people to check the website to make sure of that.
Okay. And then I forgot the question I was going to ask you, so I'm just going to say, if there is one movie that you wanted to make sure that people knew about because maybe it's just not as well known as any of the others, which one might that be?
Oh, gosh. That's this year, for the aficionados, this year's program is almost like a greatest hits show. But I will say that one night where we color a little bit outside the lines, mm-hmm. I use color precisely, mm-hmm. is we're showing on Saturday, February 1st, we're showing a movie called Inferno in the evening show, and that is a color 3D movie.
Ooh.
From 1953.
That sounds like a
starring Rhonda Fleming, and it's fantastic. It's one of the best 3D movies ever made. And yes, we'll have the glasses for you.
Awesome.
And it's really, really fun.
And if people want to find out more about the books that you've already written and the book that's coming out, how do they go about doing that?
I would suggest going to eddiemuller.com.
Okay.
And it's Muller, M-U-L-L-E-R, no E after the U.
Okay.
People make that mistake all the time.
Well, Eddie Muller, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. You know how I feel about noir, and I think you're groovy and fantastic, so it always tickles me when I have you on.
It is such a pleasure. The only downside this time was that I wasn't there to see you in person, but we'll make up for that at the festival.
Yeah. All right. Well, Eddie, thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
You too. All right, People of Earth, this is your opportunity to check out the Noir City 10-day extravaganza. It's a lot of fun. I quite enjoy it. You know what you might enjoy? Art Farmer, Red Mitchell, Jerry Mulligan, Bud Shank, all of them, they played a thing called Frisco Club from I Wanna Live. Just about time for me to go off into the wild blue yonder. So until next week, my friends, enjoy this Nina Simone, ta-ta, and toodle-doo.
My skin is black.